Welcome to SCOTUSCast, the False Claims Act and FOIA edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 1st, 2011, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Schindler Elevator v. United States ex rel. Kirk, a case involving the False Claims Act. In general, the False Claims Act authorizes private individuals who discover fraud against the United States to sue on its behalf. If prosecution of the case is successful, the act allows the individual to recover a portion of the damages and penalties imposed on the defrauder. There is, however, a notable exception to the general rule. The act does not permit a private individual to sue based on information that was previously disclosed in a government report or investigation, unless the individual was the original source of that information. The question in this case is whether alleged fraud disclosed in a federal agency's response to a Freedom of Information Act request falls within the government report or investigation bar to suit. To discuss the case, we have Elizabeth P. Papez, who is a partner at Winston & Strawn, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Papez.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Papez with Winston & Strawn in Washington, D.C., with a report on the Supreme Court's argument on March 1st in Schindler Elevator versus U.S. ex rel. Kirk. The argument was an active one because this case has commercial and jurisprudential significance well beyond what one might assume from the relatively narrow statutory question presented. That question is whether a federal agency's response to a Freedom of Information Act or FOIA request constitutes the kind of government report or investigation that can bar a key TAM relator or private attorney general from bringing a lucrative enforcement suit against a government contractor under the Federal False Claims Act, or FCA. The precise scope of this statutory bar is important because it helps define the circumstances in which plaintiffs who are not government lawyers and would otherwise lack standing to sue can use the federal courts to pursue large financial bounties for proving fraud on the government. The court's opinion on the statutory question in this case could thus significantly impact the multi-billion dollar industries that do business with the federal government, and the opinion will also supply the latest chapter in a separation of powers story that dates back to the Civil War. Petitioner Schindler, the defendant below, manufactures, installs, and maintains elevators and escalators that are used in buildings throughout the world, including in buildings owned or operated by the federal government. Respondent Daniel Kirk, the plaintiff below, is a Vietnam veteran and former Schindler employee who, after leaving the company in 2003, brought a series of unsuccessful lawsuits against Schindler for matters ranging from state law defamation to federal ERISA violations. The current case arose out of the last of these suits, in which Kirk alleged that Schindler, which supplies goods and services to the federal government under government contracts, violated the False Claims Act requirement that all such contractors file with the Department of Labor documentation of their compliance with federal law governing the employment of military veterans. Two aspects of Kirk's claim bear emphasis. First, Kirk's allegation that Schindler failed to comply with the requirements of its government contracts and thus falsely claimed payment for fulfilling those contracts was not based on Kirk's personal knowledge of Schindler's veterans' filings. The allegations were instead based largely on the Department of Labor's responses to FOIA requests that Schindler's wife submitted to the agency before Schindler filed suit. It was in those FOIA responses that the department indicated that Schindler did not file veterans reports for several years during which Schindler served as a government contractor. Second, Kirk did not claim that he personally suffered any injury as a result of Schindler's alleged failure to file the veterans reports. Rather, Kirk filed suit under the provisions of the False Claims Act that permit private parties to serve as so-called key TAM relators. In essence, private attorneys general who sue on the government's behalf to recover unlawful payments under government contracts or programs. Kirk's status as a key TAM relator is critical because it is the source of the bounty hunter motive the statutory bar in this case exists to control. Relators function like government prosecutors in that they sue to remedy an alleged fraud on the government, but They have a personal financial stake in their cases that government lawyers do not, because the False Claims Act entitles relators to anywhere between 10 and 30% of the government's recovery in a successful litigation. In Kirk's case, these provisions meant that he could personally recover up to $90 million for proving that Schindler engaged in federal contracting violations that did not personally harm him in any way. The odd fit between QI-TAM suits and our constitutional system of government gives rise to the statutory bar before the court in this case, so it's worth taking a moment to discuss. QI-TAM is an abbreviation of a Latin phrase that basically means one who sues on behalf of the king as well as himself, and has referred since the 14th century to suits in England and the American colonies in which private citizens were awarded bounties for helping prosecute fraud on the crown. These suits are, however, in obvious tension with our constitutional system, which vests law enforcement authority in executive branch officers who do not stand to profit financially from their prosecutions, and that limits federal court suits to cases in which a plaintiff has personally suffered some injury. Accordingly, QI-TAM suits fell into disuse from the time the Constitution was adopted until 1865, when widespread fraud on the government by Civil War suppliers prompted the President to ask Congress to pass legislation authorizing such actions. Congress did so, and the QI-TAM provisions of the False Claims Act have been volleyed back and forth between the federal courts and the political branches ever since. The issue currently before the court is part of this history. In 1942, the Attorney General asked Congress to repeal the FCA's QI-TAM provisions because they allowed purely parasitic suits in which relators would not bring any new information to light, but would simply pursue bounties for claims based on information already known to the government. Before Congress could act on the AG's request, however, the Supreme Court issued a ruling validating the QI-TAM statute and the QI-TAM mechanism. Accordingly, Congress split the baby and amended, rather than repealed, the FCA to impose the bar at issue in Kirk's suit. The 1943 amendments phrased the bar as a, quote, government knowledge bar that would preclude relators from pursuing bounty suits based on information already known to the government. Over the next several decades, federal courts faithfully applied the bar to dismiss QI-TAM actions. Congress's reaction to these decisions was that the bar was too strict. So in 1986, Congress liberalized it to say federal courts lack jurisdiction only over QI-TAM suits that are based upon, quote, the public disclosure of allegations or transactions in, among other things, administrative reports or investigations. This report or investigation component of the so-called public disclosure bar is what Schindler invoked as grounds for dismissing Kirk's suit. Schindler argued that because Kirk's FCA allegations, namely that Schindler failed to file the veterans reports required of government contractors, were based on FOIA responses, Kirk's lawsuit was based on allegations that were publicly disclosed in a government report or investigation and was thus jurisdictionally barred under the statute. The district court agreed with Schindler, but the Second Circuit reversed. In an opinion by Justice Sotomayor's friend and former colleague Judge Katzmann, the Second Circuit agreed with Schindler and all other circuits that information in FOIA responses is publicly disclosed, but it disagreed with Schindler and three other circuits that FOIA responses qualify as, quote, administrative reports or investigations for purposes of the FCA's jurisdictional bar. Instead, the Second Circuit agreed with the Ninth Circuit that FOIA responses do not so qualify because reports or investigations refer to agency work product that, quote, compiles, analyzes, and synthesizes information to serve some end of government, and FOIA responses simply involve the mechanistic production of documents in response to a public request. The Supreme Court granted review to resolve the circuit split over the proper meaning of, quote, administrative report or investigation, and hence the scope of the FCA's public disclosure bar. The question is at bottom one of garden variety statutory interpretation, but the stakes are high and the context significant because the separation of powers volley on the bar did not end with passage of the 1986 amendments. In a series of decisions over the last decade, notably a 2004 D.C. Circuit decision by then-Judge Roberts and two Supreme Court decisions in 2008 and 2010, the federal courts have construed the 1986 amendments in ways that limit QI-TAM suits. The political branches recently responded by enacting, in a single 18-month period, three separate FCA amendments the latter two as part of the health reform and Dodd-Frank bills that substantially liberalize several aspects of the QI-TAM regime and specifically seek to nullify the prospective effect of the Supreme Court's 2008 and 2010 decisions by altering the statutory language on which those decisions rely. Kirk's case comes before the court on the heels of this congressional backlash and in the midst of what the executive branch has termed an unprecedented effort to enforce federal anti-fraud laws, including the False Claims Act. This enforcement effort is a multi-billion-dollar game with big stakes for the government, industry, QI-TAM relators, and the federal courts. The Justice Department has recovered more than $5 billion in FCA settlements from the pharmaceutical sector alone since 2009. Individual relators have recovered bounties in the tens and even hundreds of millions of dollars. The Justice Department has a backlog of approximately 1,000 QI-TAM cases awaiting intervention decisions, and several federal courts have expressed frustration at the government's delay in responding to the expanding number of QI-TAM suits on the federal docket. It is against this backdrop that the court must construe the scope of the administrative reports or investigations bar in this case. Schindler has three circuits, plain meaning, certainty of application, and some strong historical and policy considerations on its side. Kirk has two circuits and the support of the United States, which told the court that accepting Schindler's view that all FOIA requests and responses qualify as reports or investigations would bar more QI-TAM suits than the FCA's text and context require and would frustrate the government's efforts to combat program fraud. The justices probed both perspectives at argument. Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor appeared most skeptical of Schindler's position and were joined by the Chief and Justice Kennedy in questioning how the government's mere compilation of documents in response to a FOIA request could qualify as a, quote, report or investigation. Justice Ginsburg specifically challenged Schindler's assertion that documents that a private contractor files with an agency can be transformed into a government report or investigation simply by the agency's ministerial act of publishing them in response to a FOIA request. The Chief and Justice Kennedy echoed this concern, and Justice Sotomayor pressed Schindler on whether barring all QI-TAM suits based on FOIA disclosures would undermine the FCA's goal of using such suits to assist the government in prosecuting fraud. Schindler's counsel responded that FOIA responses qualify as reports or investigations because they involve more than just the ministerial reproduction of private party filings. They require judgment calls about whether certain documents are responsive to the request, as well as government work product in the form of legal assessments and redactions under statutes like the Privacy Act. He further explained that Schindler's definition of reports or investigations would not affect the broad bar on QI-TAM suits that Justice Sotomayor feared because the bar would not operate where a suit was based on a relator's personal knowledge of the alleged fraud and would thus preclude only the kind of purely parasitic suits that Congress had long sought to avoid. He also emphasized the 2010 FCA amendments in the health reform bill would further mitigate the impact of the bar by allowing the government to oppose dismissal of QI-TAM suits that would otherwise fall under the public disclosure exception. Justices Scalia and Alito were most skeptical of Kirk's position. In addition to emphasizing the uncertainty of the Second Circuit's document-by-document approach to the disclosure bar, they pressed Kirk and the government on the fact that their definition of reports or investigations would seem to exclude government documents expressly labeled as such. Justice Kennedy and the Chief separately challenged Kirk and the government to explain how the compilation of FOIA responses did not satisfy the Second Circuit's test that a report or investigation serve a government end. And Justice Breyer expressed some frustration when the government was unable to explain why it would consider a compilation of documents a report if the compilation were delivered to a government compliance officer, but would not consider the same compilation a report if delivered to a member of the public pursuant to a FOIA request. Counsel for both Kirk and the government had difficulty articulating a clear affirmative definition of report or investigation, but emphasized that such uncertainty was not a reason for discarding the proper meaning of the FCA's reference to reports or for limiting the important role QI-TAM suits play in uncovering fraud on the government. How the court will rule is anyone's guess, particularly because Justice Kagan is recused, so Kirk needs only four votes to preserve the Second Circuit's judgment. But if the questions at argument are at all predictive, there is at least a chance of reversal on a 5-3 or perhaps a 6-2 vote, depending where the Chief and Justices Kennedy and Breyer come out. The import of the court's opinion will, of course, depend on more than whether a majority votes to reverse or affirm. It will depend on how the opinion is written. Though I don't suggest that the court will engage in policymaking, it is certainly cognizant of the separation of powers concerns that attend expansive use of the QI-TAM mechanism. Indeed, it expressly reserved judgment on such concerns in an opinion upholding relator standing, and it is also well aware of the recent spate of legislative amendments effectively overruling its recent decisions. These issues, though not part of the statutory analysis per se, could impact the opinion in the form of interpretive tools like the avoidance canon or in the court's consideration of the FCA's history and purpose. The arguments the court engages to support its decision could also significantly impact the opinion's scope. If, for example, the court sides with Schindler but does so in reliance on some of the jurisdictional arguments in the opening brief, the opinion could have limited force in cases arising under the 2010 Health Reform Bill amendments because those amendments purport to remove the jurisdictional characterization of the public disclosure bar and purport to empower the government to prevent the courts from dismissing otherwise barred suits. Similarly, if the court sides with Kirk, it'll be interesting to see whether the government, which is already witnessing an uptick in FCA cases and is about to issue a complementary securities whistleblower regime under Dodd-Frank, will get more than it bargained for in the form of a spike in whistleblower litigation it cannot fully control. Either way, the case is an interesting and important one to watch.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.